when you get angry, what do? There are people who will let you very well know that they're angry. They just sort of all over them, not to mention they're yelling at you and that kind of stuff. For a second group of people, they're angry and they don't let you know as much, but they sort of, the slow simmer type, I'm angry. Do you know I'm angry with you? And then there's a type that just sucks it in and bears it. Which type are you? You missed the question?
Yeah.
We want to know what kind of person you are when you get angry. Are you loud and boisterous and everybody knows? Are you slow and just simmer and say something like, I'm angry at you, but not really get loose control, or do you just keep it within?
Try not to lose control.
Okay.
Try not to get angry. That's the best thing.
That's good.
I don't have a good temper.
You don't?
I have a bad temper.
You have a bad temper?
Yeah.
Ooh. John. You hang on to it and stay quiet when you're angry. You're all three? They're idiots anyhow, so you can overlook it. Okay.
I work real fast.
I don't know if you know this about my wife. You brought the subject up. I can tell how mad she is by how fast she's cleaning the kitchen. If she's in high drive and moving, I just steer clear because that's a bad moment.
Bad sign.
Yeah. But I don't know if you've ever just lost it with me and yelled at me, but you have cleaned the kitchen fast. We do the whole spring house cleaning in one day. Gotta have two more. Joe.
I take it in for a long time, and then something happens, and I explode.
Ooh.
That's the pressure cooker approach.
Pressure cooker approach?
Yeah.
I call that the hall closet. Because we always have a whole closet that's stuffed full. And if you open the door and you put one more thing in, you just know everything's going to fall out into the hallway. Okay, have one more. An emulsifier. Okay, that's good. It's not always easy. Okay, Chuck.
Susan says, when I get upset, she says, when you're really upset, she says, the color of your eyes change. And she says, she can tell. When they do. And she says, they get dark. When I'm really upset, they get dark. And she says, she knows I'm upset. She says, people around you don't know you're upset. But I know you're upset.
Yeah, I've never seen that. In 15 years, I've never seen your eyes change color.
Yeah.
How many people, when they get angry, hold it in until they get somewhere by themselves?
I don't know.
And then, once they get somewhere by themselves, they have this massive release, whether that's throwing things or
Yeah, in fact, that's what I teach in counseling. If somebody can't control their temper, I tell them find a way to control it. If it's a punching bag, use a punching bag. If it's running a mile, run a mile. If you're really upset, run two. It's the method where nobody else gets hurt and you get it out. I keep it in. I keep it in. And that keeps Sue guessing where I'm at. So it's worked for 46 years. I'll probably keep doing it for a while. But we're going the subject of grace, and we're starting to learn how to forgive. This is one of those subjects that we say, forgive, Chuck. And then we walk on. That's sort of like trying to fly a 767 jet. Everything's there on the plane, and you're in the runway, but if you don't know which switch to pull, it's not going to go. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So, I thought we'd talk about the guy who was known for anger in the Bible. When God looks at him, he's going to say, why are you angry? Anybody guess? Jonah. This is Jonah. You'll notice he's in the who's who of pictures. Somebody like to read. Okay. Why does he have this reaction about Nineveh? Yes, they did have a big library there, and they're very large. Miss Dorothy, you were saying?
I was saying, wasn't it a wicked city?
It was a pretty wicked city. It is the capital of Assyria. Did that help?
Well, we really don't know when Jonah was written historically, to me, as far as the history of the Jews.
We know fairly well, yes. Okay.
Assyria was an enemy of Israel.
Yeah, they took the northern kingdom. We'll make you Assyrians tonight, okay?
Okay.
And when they went into a city, they took the best of everything. They take them back to their capital and they exploit them. As you enter Nineveh, there are the skulls of the kings that they have conquered on each side of the big door. These are ruthless people. And so God says, Jonah, go preach to Nineveh. And my imagination runs wild, and I think he just looked up at God and said, you got to be kidding. It's me against the whole city, and you want me to go. You just got to be kidding. Paul.
You almost want to ask yourself, what's the point in preaching against it? Everybody knows they're bad dudes.
Yeah.
So go and telling them what they already know, what good is that going to do?
Yeah, he's got to seriously consider what they're going to do to him. He doesn't have a contingent with him to do any battling in the streets. It's going to be Jonah and the Ninevites. Yeah, it's a smart, short thing. Yeah, it is.
Well, he's going to preach against them. Part of what he's going to tell them is, you know you're wicked. Everybody knows you're wicked. But now you've got God's attention. And that is different.
Mm-hmm.
And God, you got so much of his attention, God sent me as a prophet to tell you how bad it is and that you got his attention.
Okay, good. I need to come back here and both ears stopped up. So.
I said, did they even believe in God? So what?
Nineveh?
Yeah.
Yeah, through the Israelites, they know about gods. They have their own gods, though. But he would definitely be dignified.
The gods were probably fine with stacking them skulls.
Yeah, they would be. So, you get a direct command from God, you hear his voice, go preach to Nineveh, and you head for Tarshish. Yeah. This is the map. If you can see over here is Jerusalem. He's going to catch this out of Gath Hepher. And over here is Tarshish. Nineveh's way over here. He's going as far away from where God told him to go as he can possibly get. In his day and time, I wouldn't be surprised if they thought that's where the edge of the world was, and if you went any further, you'd fall off. But he's going as far away from Nineveh as he can possibly get. Paul.
It's kind of interesting to me that Jonah's not alone. A lot of people try to run away from God, but there's nowhere to run.
Mm-hmm.
So saying, I'm going to go run away from the Lord, it doesn't matter how far you go. He's going to be wherever he needs to be.
Yeah, I think this is where emotions cause you to run wild. Those of you who don't know, I give a test before I do weddings. And I do a test so I can weed out those who are going to be disasters. That either the bride or the groom, or usually the bride and the groom, are so different that if they get married, it's going to be one shout match, and unless they get counseling before they go. And they don't see this. In Pittsburgh, I had somebody that had been married. They came to be married the sixth time to each other. First five times didn't work. Let's try it sixth time and see if it works. And they always said the same thing. We're in love. And I said, well, it didn't work the first five times when you were in love. Why is it going to work the sixth time when you're in love? I think this is, he's scared. God's told him to go preach. He doesn't think that's going to be an answer. And then he thinks Nineveh's going to live up to Nineveh's reputation.
Afraid
his head's going to be on top of the pile. Well, yeah, it could be. All right. Somebody want to read?
But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid.
I don't know. I only know two other people that can sleep this deep. One, Jesus, when he was in the storm, he slept through it. And my wife sleeps this deep. Yeah, she doesn't snore. She just goes, I'm really jealous. She sits down, she goes to sleep. I do not have that power. And I wish I did. But we used to have bats coming into our house when we lived in West Virginia, and I would kill the bat, and she would swear nothing happened until I'd show her the dead bat. And then she decided, well, something happened. I said, oh, you know that cover on the roof that you just bought? We need another one. And then she would believe me, but those were the good old days. He's sort of having a good old sleep time. I like the mouse. It's not original with me. But the storm's going on, and he's laying down under the deck, unaware. So far, so good.
Well, the deep sleep, is that an indication of how desperately he was running?
Mm-hmm. When he started running, he had an adrenaline rush. And once you have the adrenaline rush, you come way down and get sleepy. That's when you work hard all day, you had that, you got there, or you play all day and you got there. Once it's gone, you go a little deeper. So he's there. How did I find out in this day? It's a strange thing that a lot of people talk about, and a lot of commentators. And a lot of commentators talk. They made it dice. Probably wasn't dice, but it's something real close. You get a group of men together, and you put colored stones in a bag. You shake it up, and then you have everybody choose one. And somebody who gets the black stone is the guy chosen. Now, sometimes that was good, and sometimes that was bad. For instance, in Acts 1, when they chose another apostle, they cast lots, and it fell on Matthias. Okay? So it's a good thing here. Let somebody else read.
The captain went to him and said, "How can we sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us, and we will not perish." And the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity." They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, "Tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you?" He answered, "I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land." This terrified them, and they asked, "What have you done?" They knew he was running away from the Lord, because he had already told them so.
Okay, what do y'all see? He's about to get caught. That's one of the things that's going to happen.
Well, they believe that their gods were responsible for all things, and their gods controlled all things, depending on what it was. You know, somebody controlled the wind, somebody controlled the rain, whatever. Mm-hmm.
They picked up on what Jonah said about he made the sea and the land. Well, where are we? We're in the sea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your God is the one who made it. Uh-oh. Because you're right. Different gods made different things.
Yeah.
In their mind.
Okay. So, yeah, they say that, okay. I don't know if I went that far. I wanted to get to 3 and 4, so I didn't want to go. They're thinking they're drowning, that this is it. If they don't calm the seas somehow or have a God calm the seas, these experienced sailors are going to drown. So they start throwing cargo overseas. And if you get this, I'll take it this time. The sea was getting rougher, so they asked him, "What should we do to make the sea calm for us?" "Pick me up and throw me into the sea," he replied, "and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you." Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea even grew wilder. And then they cried to the Lord, "Oh Lord, please, do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man. Oh, Lord, you have done as you've pleased." And they took Jonah and they threw him overboard. And the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord. They offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. But the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah. Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and three nights. Okay, they got down to desperate means, and they throw him over, and they're begging their gods not to punish them. And they've learned a little bit about his God, so he's sort of included in the group. Yeah, but if you remember when they got him downstairs, they said, call to whichever God you use. Okay.
Well, it says they offered a sacrifice.
They did, after the sea calmed down.
Yeah, so they knew that his God had the power to calm the sea.
Yes. This is my little picture, let you know what it looked like. If you're a fisherman, that's the kind of fish you want. This comes to the controversial point. The fish throws Jonah up on shore. He's been in the fish's belly for 3 days and three nights. Is that a possibility? Yeah, we've actually had people that stayed for a period of time in the fish's belly. And then they cut him out and he was alive. They're on record. But when you're in the fish's belly, you got digestive juices flowing. And it tends to bleach the skin white. So the big debate is whether being in the fish turned him a shade of white that they hadn't seen before. And they weren't going to get on the wrong side of him. That's what some believe. I don't know what to believe on it. But it, certainly if some guy came out all white, like he had been in a Clorox bottle all night, I think I would have taken notice. But I'm not sure at all. So pay your money, take your choice. You'll find some people that agree with you. He goes. Would somebody like to read? This is a short one. Okay, if you go to Nineveh, it's going to take a three-day walk to get through it. That's down the main thoroughfare, which all towns had. And he's just sort of going down the regular old thoroughfare, preaching away. But he's got a worry. What's the worry?
They'll repent.
It's a funny worry. He's worried that they'll listen to God. And that God, because they've listened to God, will have mercy and grace and forgive them. And if they forgive them, you're forgiving everything that ever happened to Israel. You're forgiving every bad deed they ever did. These are heathens. Why would God want them to be saved anyway? All they'll do is kill the next group that goes anywhere close to Nineveh. So he's got all these things running through his head, and he's worried. And it turns out he should be. Let somebody else read that one. Yep. Yeah. Four. Okay. He's been effective. And now he's got the whole population of Nineveh repenting in sackcloth and ashes. And they're fasting. This is a complete fast. You don't eat anything, you don't drink anything. Because just maybe God won't do what he set out to do. He won't destroy Nineveh. I think so. Something special.
He was brave. He had to be brave to go do that anyway. I mean, God told him that he had to psych himself up to get there.
I don't know if he had any special powers doing this or not. It doesn't say that. But this is another pay your money, take your choice.
With his own story, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So what Sue said about why did they believe, I don't think they necessarily believed Jonah, because I'm not sure his message was spoken from his heart. But I think they understood about God, who God is. In their mind, what do I have to lose? Maybe he'll change his mind.
Yeah. Good point. Thank you.
They almost seem to listen better than the Israelites.
They do listen better than the Israelites, by far. The Israelites are so used to God being around, they don't listen like this. So what he does, Jonah became greatly displeased and became angry. Wait a minute, you had a town that you're going to utterly destroy. People repent and you get angry.
Isn't it fascinating that at the end of the story here, we find out something we didn't know in the beginning. Jonah said, we had this discussion before I ever left home. I knew what you were going to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knew what kind of God you were. I didn't want Nineveh to have anything to do with you. He prayed, Lord, oh Lord, is this not what I said when I was still at home, why I was so quick to flee to Tarshish? I knew that you were a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger, abounding in love, a God who relents from calamity. Now, oh Lord, just take my life, for it is better for me to die than to live. These people are repenting, and because they're repenting, it would be better if I died than if I lived.
It's kind of like a drama queen.
A drama queen? Okay.
He's truly angry, though.
Oh, he is angry.
Yeah.
Sounds a little like Elijah.
A lot like Elijah. When he was up on the mount, and he says, just, nobody's going to serve you but me, and now they're seeking my, yeah, and now they're seeking my life too, so just let me die. This is anger. He's so mad that he says, God, if you're going to be this kind of God that you've always been, just let me die. He could have.
But God was nice enough to give him a second chance.
Okay. God's nice enough to give him a second chance. I guess it's there. I just put up a lot of translations here. But the Lord replied, "Do you have any right to be angry?" Contemporary English version, the Lord said, "What right do you have to be angry?" The Amplified, the Lord said, "Do you do well to be angry?" And the New American Standard Version, 1995 edition, "Do you have good reason to be angry? You're so angry, you want to die. Do you have any right to be there?"
I want to talk stereotypically for a minute. I'm not saying any of us are doing this.
Okay.
Sometimes when we see someone else being kind to someone who doesn't deserve it, we get angry.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they being nice to them? I know what kind of person they are or what they've done. And we get angry when we see someone showing grace, love, forgiveness, kindness to someone who doesn't deserve it in our mind.
Oh, I hadn't gone that deep. Yeah, it's almost a jealousy.
God is still good to people. I mean, they receive things. In fact, that's why he says, "I let it rain."
On the just and the unjust.
And those that appreciate it and those that don't. But sometimes you say, "Why is it they're getting it and I'm not?"
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Some things are reflex actions, because that's what society teaches us.
Yes. But he's at the point where if he sees these people repent and come to God, he's out of there. That's angry. Jonah went out, sat down at a place east of the city, made himself a shelter, sat in its shade and waited to see what would happen to the city. So you're at a point, God said, go preach to Nineveh. He did. They started repenting. Now he says, "God, I am so mad. Just let me die that you're going to bring Nineveh back." And so he gets this little shelter that he makes. And he says, "Let's see what God does." And he's just under his shelter. Daytime, it keeps the heat off. Nighttime, keeps cold breezes down. So he's there watching. We'll run out of time again. And the Lord provides a vine, probably a gourd. That's what's in the original text that we have. So it's probably a gourd. If you want to say vine, that's fine. Gourd, vine, that's fine too. But this is a broad leaf plant. It's great for making shelters. It'll keep the rain off. It'll keep the wind off. In the daytime, it's cool. You're in the shade. At nighttime, you hold the heat in so you're not cold. And it pops up all of a sudden by itself. He didn't plant it. It's just boom. You got a little shelter, and all of a sudden, this leafy thing overnight has transposed it. So far, so good. He likes the vine. He really likes the vine. It's so nice. Cool. It's so good. You'll notice the artwork. I stole these from Sweet Publishing. But at dawn the next day, God provided a worm which chewed the vine so that it withered. He has this place, and it's great, and it's fantastic. Nobody's had a place like this ever, and now the place is gone.
He's mad again.
Would somebody like to read? Do you have the right to be angry? Who made the vine? I'll come over here and look at Chuck for a while. I'm just looking at you. Who makes the vine? God made the vine. Did Jonah have anything to do whatsoever with the vine? Did he put the seed in the ground? Did he water it? Did he have anything whatsoever to do with the vine? No. It came up because God put it there and wanted it to come up. It provides him comfy things. Is it Jonah's job to provide comfy? Did he provide any of the comfy things that he was now enjoying? No. God's provided them all. And then God decides to bring a worm. And Jonah doesn't like that at all. How many times has he said, I'm mad enough to die, in the book of Jonah? Four times. He is mad enough to die. Now that's pretty mad. Yeah, he was sort of a slow boiling point. This is essential if you're going to learn to control your anger and be able to forgive. You got to be able to know what you're mad about. Let me give you a hint. Oh, have you gotten a speeding ticket this week?
Nope.
I give you one. You got a speeding ticket this week. He really doesn't, but we gave him one. Chuck pulls over, the policeman pulls behind him, he rolls down his window, he says, you were going 39 in a 35-mile-an-hour zone. And Chuck says, haven't made your quota this week? He wouldn't say that, I just gave it to him. Ever hear people do that? That is what misplaced anger is. Yes, I did it, but it's somebody else's fault. Isn't it always? Some people think about that. But sometimes it's not rational to think this way. We don't want to be blamed, so we blame somebody else when the only person who can control your anger is you. And if you don't want to lose it to the place where you stop talking to other people, you got to realize you got to know what you're angry about. Or as God would say to Jonah, what are you so angry about? Right. And he was extra big. What I hear a lot on TV is misplaced anger. Somebody does something or gets involved with a gang and they say, they just didn't provide them enough activities at home or around there. They should have more clubs and sporting events and all that. They should be doing that kind of stuff for my poor boy, and then he wouldn't have broken into all those houses. It's really society's fault for not caring deep enough. He's responsible for what he does. Second one, anger as a means of intimidation. I got this one. I just come up to Don, yell at him, scream, and talk about his hairdo, and yeah. And if he doesn't do what I want him to do, when I want him to do it, I just get a little louder. Now he's scared, because I look mean when I want to. Stop shaking your head, yes, Sylvie. Sometimes that's what our anger is about. I want things to change my way, and so if I get loud enough, if I get threatening enough, you'll change and do it my way.
Like road rage?
Yeah, a little bit like road rage. Now, some of you are looking at me funny, and this is going to get me in trouble. If I have a couple come in who are seriously in trouble, sooner or later, we'll have to get around to which one of them fights to be right. And what I mean by that is, if they say it's 3 miles down the road, it's not 3 1/10, it's not 2 9/10, it's 3 miles down the road. And they will argue till they get that point across. Well, of course, if you get two of them in the same room, it's really bad. Because they're both fighting for different points to be right. Does that make sense? The worst fight I have ever had as a counselor was the wife thought the husband was putting the dishes in the dishwasher wrong. And she had to get his out of the way so they would do it her way. She has a 67-year-old husband who's doing the dishes for her, and she's upset. He's moving around. Don't let Brent know.
I can still empty it.
Yeah, you can empty it well? Okay. If you do these things, why are you angry? They're different for everyone up there. Nope, that's it. I do have a big assignment, though.
So you can blow that up to any age person. So that's a lot of times people say, I do have the right to be angry for that because I was
We're going to hit how to work this in next week and how to get rid of your anger. No, it doesn't fall in any of these. These were simply to point out when we get mad, it's not because we just got mad. There are a lot of these, and the degrees are different. Who do you think gets the hottest fights? The right fighter. The right fighter. The one who fights to show he's right. The thing is, you can't be right always. They asked which one was the worst. Up here, the right fighter by far, because sometimes I've got to tell them they're wrong, and then they come at me. So it's one of those things that happens. Okay? No, I got one more quick assignment. How am I doing this? Okay, let me give it to you verbally. I want you to get either a concordance, a Bible scholar, or Google it. I don't care how you do it. But I want you to go through Proverbs and see what it says about an angry man. So if you see somebody, look around and you say, oh, they look smart and they know a lot of Bible, phone them. Go over and see them, whatever. But I want you to look and see what the Bible says before we get in.
This is a different subject. Wow, it's about Nineveh. If my memory's right, which is not always for sure, they were later completely destroyed to the fact that even when Alexander the Great came through, because he couldn't find